Today is January 14th, 2015, and this is episode number 289, I think, of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
No, it's not. It's not actually 289. I think it's 290.
Oh, jeez.
Man, just like fail and fail and fail. Now, at this point, of course, we could just start over, but, you know, that seems silly.
That just seems like a waste of energy to go back and start the show over.
Yeah, you know, you got to push buttons and stuff. It's episode 289. And I'm Brian Chaffin, Chief Idiot at the Mac Observer. That is my title for this week. That is so funny. If you want to send us hate mail, so you can do so. Send it to ACM at MacObserver.com.
And start it with Dear Brian.
Yes, start with Dear Brian, and you can look us up at MacObserver.com/ACM.
Oh, Brian.
We have a sponsor this week, Lynda.com.
I like Lynda. They're good people.
Yeah. Yeah, they are good people. We're going to tell you about them later.
In episode 289.
In episode 289. We have some ideas for you that I try to gloss over the reminder that I just made a debacle of our intro. It's really
in
it's
episode
a good thing.
289.
Yeah, it's a good thing that we just didn't just start over. Because, you know.
Well, this shows your human side. And that's really important.
Yes, a rare glimpse at my human side. Speaking of human sides.
I was young. I needed the money, okay?
What is the deal? I'm going to ignore that one. What is the deal with Apple and managing devices and stores and iTunes and music libraries and iBooks? What's the deal with that?
There's no human side in that at all. It's a demonic cesspool of frustration and despair.
I called it, you know, and we were putting our show notes together ahead of time. I called it Apple's iOS management morass. I think it's entirely apropos.
Oh, absolutely. It's
all right.
Go ahead.
So here's what sparked this. Mark Gurman at 9to5 Mac. I almost always love what that guy does. He published some screenshots from iOS 8.2 beta 4 that show a new companion app for the Apple Watch. So this is an app that one would use on one's iPhone or I assume iPad to manage your Apple Watch, including, like, you know, reordering apps, your various settings, choosing a face, you know, just it's the app you would use, right? That's what kind of got Jeff and I thinking about the bigger picture. Not that we were the first people to ever think about that bigger picture, but we're
the first people that really count because it's us.
Well, we're the first people that run this show.
See,
that have done this. So it's a huge, massive, massive first, and we don't actually know. It's very possible that, you know, that iTunes 12 point crap will have Apple Watch management features built into it, just like one does with for iPhone or iTunes, iPad. Good Lord. It's very possible that we will be able to manage our Apple Watches from iTunes, just like we manage our other iOS devices. But it actually seems like Apple is shifting management of the Apple Watch to the iPhone.
Which kind of makes sense to me, because if Apple Watch is an iPhone accessory, why not manage everything that goes along with it from the iPhone?
Well, because we manage the iPhone itself, well, at least a lot of us do, from our computers. Why have a different way of doing it? I'm actually okay with an additional way of doing it. But I'm going to be kind of tense if Apple is further splitting stuff off. Look, we've got iTunes. You know, iTunes started off as a way to play music and manage your iPod. Mm-hmm. Actually, it started off just as a way to play music.
Yeah, it was just a music player.
It was a music player. And then Apple said, you know, and now you're going to be able to manage your iPod to it too. You know, you'll be able to because here's your music library and here's your iPod. And so, you know, from the same software, you're going to manage your music library and what's on your iPod. Well, that made a ton of sense. And then when Apple rolled out iTunes, the iTunes Store, or as it was first called, the Apple Music Store, for less than a day. Everyone forgets that, but it was the Apple Music Store for a few hours.
And then it became iTunes Music Store.
And then it became the iTunes Music Store, right? Because Apple had an agreement with the Beatles not to enter the music business.
So they didn't, because they called it the iTunes Music Store.
Yeah, right. Well, right. Yes. So Apple, by the way, now owns all this, you know, to do some housekeeping. Apple owns the rights to all of that stuff from Apple Corp these days.
Yeah, pretty much the only thing they don't own from that are the genetic codes for each of the Beatles members. I don't know, maybe they actually do.
They could. They don't own any of the Beatles music either. They just own the rights to use all of that, to use Apple pretty much wherever they want to. Anyway, that's the massive rabbit hole. iTunes was introduced, and again, you're using iTunes to add to your music library. So it made sense to add it to iTunes. But then we get the iPhone, then we get the iPad, then we get the iBook Store, and the App Store, not necessarily in that order. Right. And lots of folks are cranky about iTunes, and I don't really blame them. I'm super cranky about the interface.
Oh, man, I was ranting on Twitter yesterday about the iTunes 12 interface.
What were you saying?
I was going on about how it's near impossible for me to do a search in iTunes to find the music in my own library that I want to play and then play it.
Yeah, Apple has kind of made that hard, but at least it's kind of, you know, it's just wonky finding everything now. I don't like it. I don't like it. Taking away the sidebar was stupid. That was a fantastic innovation, man. The sidebar was a great innovation in interfaces. That whole thing, that's part of the reason why they bought or hired the two guys that were making SoundJam to make iTunes, was because of their sidebar interface. You know, that sidebar interface quickly went to other apps like Mail.
Yeah, it did. And it's worked. It has served its purpose very well. And I don't think it's really hit an end of life yet.
No, yeah, it's not being in iTunes 12. The sidebar was not replaced by anything that was better. In fact, it was replaced by something that's significantly unbetter.
Yes, and
that's a technical term, by the way. Don't try to use that one at home.
No, we're trained professionals.
We are.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. If you want to use that term, you need to have top men. Top men.
Which men?
Top.
Okay. Men. I see. Yeah, and here's another thing. This is what actually really sent me over the edge and wanting to rant about this in today's episode number 289 of the Apple Context Machine. And that's the fact that we have this separate iBook store. So it's like Apple started paying attention to the fact that people were cranky about iTunes becoming bloatware. And so Apple created a separate app on the Mac for the iBooks store, which I'm so delighted we have iBooks on the Mac.
So am I.
It took years. It took at least 2 years too long, but I'm glad we have it now, and that's great. But what it means is this. If you go to the iTunes store in iTunes, you can get to the iBook store. You can just follow along at home. Unless you're in your car. If you're in your car, don't follow along at home.
Unless you're in your car at home. And then be careful. You're going to leave tire marks in the living room.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they could be in the garage.
Oh, that's true.
With your laptop. They're coming home from work. They got the, anyway, so if you go to the iTunes store in iTunes, and depending on what you default to, it'd probably be music. You can sort by, you know, music, movies, TV shows, App Store, books. Oh, there it is. Books, podcasts, audiobooks, and iTunes U. Right? So you click on books. It doesn't take you to the iBook store. It doesn't take you to the iBook store app on your Mac. it takes you to the iBook store and iTunes. Now, and maybe this is because the iBooks app is a Mac thing and not a PC thing.
Okay, sure. That's a possibility. Right.
And I'm not. It's not so much that I'm cranky about being able to get to the iBook store in iTunes. I'm not cranky about that. What I'm cranky about is that I can't actually manage my books from iTunes, despite the fact that I can buy books from the iTunes store.
Well, what happens if you select, say, your iPad in iTunes?
All right, I've got my iPhone plugged into my Mac charging right now.
And of course, I'm totally setting you up for what you're about to say.
Of course you are. Of course you are. I was. Click on the device. Go up to the top bar. Click on iPhone. Oh, look on the pseudo sidebar. Books. Click on books, and I can manage which of my books from the other app go to my iPhone. But I can't actually manage the books themselves. You can only manage the books themselves from the iBooks app. It's a weird separation.
It's really weird trying to sort out why Apple has certain features in specific apps anymore.
Yeah. And then the Mac App Store, a separate app. Not part of the App Store.
That's right. Mac App Store is a separate app.
Right. And now we're going to have, apparently, a companion app on your iPhone to manage your Apple Watch. Again, I'm not cranky about being able to manage the Apple Watch from your iPhone. That's kind of cool. But if Apple doesn't also give me that ability to manage my Apple Watch from my Mac, which quite frankly, most of the time I would rather do because I guess, you know, I'm a codger. I like my keyboard and I like my mouse, trackpad, whatever. You know, I would actually rather be able to do that kind of management from a computer screen in the first place. But whatever, if Apple doesn't give us that, it's just they're splitting up iOS management to yet another thing.
What if this is a precursor of what's to come, which is take iTunes media management out as its own app. So that would be iTunes. And then the device management becomes a separate app.
Well, I think a fantastic argument can be made for having an iOS management tool on Mac and PC. Separate piece of software for managing your iPhone, for managing your iPad, for managing your Apple Watch, for managing your iPod Touch. And then having iTunes be your media management and playback tool.
I'd be totally fine with that, especially if they also fixed the iTunes interface so I could find my stuff, and when I find it, I could figure out how to play what I want. Is that too much to ask to be able to play the content that I want in my media management app?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because I don't like finding stuff, but I can find stuff and then play it. What have you not been able to find?
All right, if I want to find a specific album, or a collection of albums.
Yeah.
The only way...
Give me an example. Let's walk through this.
Okay. So let's say you have the Beatles' Love album.
Okay. So where are you? You're looking at iTunes. What is your layout?
So in iTunes, I have my music layout set up so that I see a list. Well, I've put the pseudo sidebar back in. I have my list of songs to the left of that, and then just above that list, I have the three.
Where's the pseudo sidebar? You have a. I know you have a. You have a tool. You have a. I'm sorry. You have a how-to for the pseudo for reinstituting the pseudo sideboard. Don't you? Didn't you write that?
I did.
Okay. So how does one put the pseudo sidebar back?
Oh. Crap! Where is it? It's kind of funny because I told everyone how to do it, and now I can't remember where the button was.
Oh God, we are professionals.
We're totally professionals.
We are totally professionals.
But the awesome thing is I was actually able to figure it out and write a tip so that anytime I need to remember how, I can just go in and do that. Oh, it's the playlist button. So go to music.
Yeah.
And then look across the sidebar to the right. Yeah. Next to my music, it says playlists.
Oh, look at that. Playlists. But that's, so why does the playlist get a sidebar? And then the other stuff does this. So just it's ass backwards, man. This is not smart stuff. This is not smart stuff. This is what happened. This is what happened. Oh boy, I am. Okay. Do you hear that hammering?
It's echoing right through my headphones. It's weird.
Yeah, that hammering is a bunch of people rigging up a cross to crucify me on. Because this is what happens when you put a designer in charge of software design. There's a learning curve. I love Johnny Ive. Man, I love Johnny Ive. Johnny Ive is, like, to me, one of the most amazing people on the planet. And I love all the awesome things he's given us. I love iOS 8. I love iOS 7. Love the way they look. Love the way they look. Love the way Yosemite looks. But some learning curve stuff here, because this does not make sense. That's, yeah, they're people. That's,
no,
they're,
it doesn't make sense.
They're rigging up some thorns.
So, okay, right now, so now let's say you want to find, excuse me, all of your Beatles albums.
Okay. Yeah, we're back to that.
And then, so you search for Beatles from the search field. Okay. And it brings up that pop-up list of things.
So you're still in the playlist.
I'm still in my playlist view.
Okay.
And now.
So type Beatles. Yep.
And so you get that pop-up list that shows all kinds of stuff.
Songs, artists, composers, and albums for me.
Right.
iTunes Store at the very bottom.
Right. So now, okay. Let's say I just want to tell iTunes, now that you found all the albums, just start playing in order, first song, first album, and work your way through to the last thing the Beatles did.
All right. So.
And you used to be able to do that.
Okay. You actually still can do that. So go to My Music instead of the playlist view.
All right. Now you've lost me because you've gone to a view that I never use.
All right. Well, this is why you should be using it.
But this is not how I went to visualize my music. So My Music, I see all my just squares and squares of album art.
All right. So now type Beatles in the My Music. You want to be listed. See in the far right corner, you got songs. I'm viewing it by songs, but you can also view it by albums.
Yeah, I'm artists by default. I'm viewing it by albums.
Okay, go ahead and let's see if we can do it by albums too. All right, now screw that. Visual it by songs is so much better.
All right, so looking at it by albums, I get exactly the same results that I had before, which is useless.
Okay, now visualize it by songs. And now you can start at the top.
And now I have exactly the same thing I had before.
Right. You should have a list of songs for each broken down by album. Although it's alphabetical.
And where is that?
So,
because I'm looking at my pop-up
music
list.
I'm viewing by.
This is how we make sausage, people, just so you know.
So actually hit return on the search for Beatles. And in song.
Oh, view. and now in my song view.
Yeah, now you get what you used to be able to get rather easily in iTunes, even on iTunes 11, which had its own problems.
You have no idea how close we are to having to do the explicit rating on this episode. You have no idea.
Yeah, but that is what you're looking for, right?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for.
This is the ability you want to be able to just start and play all your Beatles tunes. Well, you can do this. The only problem here with, in my opinion, the only problem with this is that it's in alphabetical order, not chronological.
Yeah, see, that's a problem too.
That is a problem too. But you would have had, I think you would have had that in previous versions too. So anyway, this is the whole point here. This is a mess. iTunes 12 is a mess. iTunes 12 is a step back in UI. We've talked about that. John Martellaro has written about it several times. I think we've talked about it on TMO Daily Observations, the daily podcast that you host.
Yes.
And it doesn't make any sense. And I like what I see in this companion app for Apple Watch, but I am pretense. I'm gonna give a new definition for that. I am pretense about the implication that Apple is further dividing, what's the word? Dividing, breaking up.
Segmenting.
Stratifying, segmenting the way that we manage our devices. And I think that, that Apple needs to sort of get back to basics on that stuff.
I agree. And just because I'm not going to let this dead horse lie, my solution to get exactly the search that I wanted was in Playlist View, create a new smart album with very specific search criteria in it.
Yeah.
And that smart album gave me the search results that I wanted.
Oh, I see.
But that's really...
Oh, that makes sense.
It makes sense, but it's lame to think that to have the level of control that I used to get out of iTunes...
Really easily,
I now have to create a smart playlist.
Well, yeah, but you don't have to. There's a slightly better way to do it. It's still inferior to what used to be. But using the view that I walked you through, one can also do it.
My original point still stands. This is crap software.
Yeah, it is. It's a crap interface.
Yes, absolute crap interface.
It's a crap interface. It's it looks good. You know, the minimalist buttons that aren't buttons, those actually, quite frankly, I think they look good. You know, but they're just... It's an iOS management morass. And this is something that I want Apple to fix. I also want to stop crashing my Mac to the login screen.
Man, you want everything, don't you?
I do. I do. Now, it's 2015, right? It's funny to say that. It's 2015. It's a brand new year.
It is a brand new year.
And I think, you know, most New Year's Eve resolutions, New Year's resolutions, most of them are just bogus. Well, I'm gonna lose 100 pounds this year. That would be me. I'm gonna learn how to speak French. I don't know. Maybe you can do that.
Ooh la la.
Best French ever. But I've got something that actually makes sense. Why not challenge yourself to learn something new? Learn how to do something new.
I think that's a brilliant idea. If only there was an easy way to find the resources to learn nearly anything you want.
It's true. If only there was. Now, we're very, very lucky. We have had in the history of the show, in the history of TDO as well, I think I can say it's your show, but I think I can safely say in the history of both of our shows, we've only had awesome sponsors.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And this week's sponsor is lynda.com.
So we're sticking with our awesomeness trend.
We are, because this is a place that has training videos to show you how to do lots and lots of things. Lynda.com is like a training nexus.
It is, and it's amazing what you can find there. I mean, they have stuff for graphic designers, they have stuff for coders, they have stuff for people that want to learn how to run a business. There's just so much there. It's awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's music recording stuff. There's graphic design stuff, as you said. There's layout stuff, design stuff, and coding stuff. And designing for coding stuff. And productivity stuff. And FileMaker stuff. Right? There's
yes.
just a lot of stuff. Excel, WordPress, right? So they got all this stuff. Here's the deal. As part of their sponsorship, you can go to lynda.com/ACM and you get a free 10-day trial, no strings attached. So for 10 days, you can do anything you want at lynda.com.
You can, not only can you do anything you want there, but you can do as much of it as you want.
Yeah. So this is your opportunity to learn something new. Here's the deal. Now, don't get me wrong. They're a sponsor. I would love it if you fell in love with them and then you ended up giving them money. Well, not giving them money, but buying access.
Yeah. Give them money. So that you can, and in exchange, they will give you access.
Right. You that's what we would like you to do. Because if you do that, they will continue to sponsor us, which makes this show possible. Okay, that would be fantastic. But here's the deal. You can go try it for free with no strings attached. So you can go learn how to do something with no strings attached. You can use this opportunity of a brand new year to learn how to do something new for free.
I think that's a brilliant opportunity.
It is a brilliant opportunity. They have 3,000 courses, and these courses are taught by top men.
Who?
Top men and women. Top men and women.
Nice. I actually know some of the people.
I do. Bob Levitis has done stuff.
That's right.
For Lunda.
Yeah.
I love Bob. So, Bob is an excellent teacher. He's also he's got a voice for radio. He's got face radio. There are lots of experts that they've hired. They've hired some really good people.
They have. It's an impressive library full of amazing training, and you will be sorry if you don't take advantage of this. So do.
Yeah, it's free.
Ten days. What was that URL?
lynda.com/ACM. Now, ACM stands for Apple Context Machine.
And Lynda is spelled LYNDA.
.com/ACM.
So go sign up.
Yeah. Yeah. Do it. All right. So I love being able to offer that. I love being at 10 days. I love being able to offer that.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Okay, now, this morning, this very morning, you ran Shepherd on John Martellaro and Dave Hamilton.
I did. I threw them into the SmackDown ring on TMO Daily Observations, locked the cage once they were in, and sat back with my popcorn and enjoyed the show.
They were talking about the idea that Apple may be planning on making the Apple Watch upgradable.
Yes. And John is thinking this is a really good idea and something Apple is very likely to do.
I think it's an interesting idea.
I think it's an interesting idea. Dave thinks it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's something Apple is not likely to do. So the premise is this. Apple has the Apple Watch. Some of those Apple Watches could be $2,000 to $5,000, maybe more.
Yeah, and Dave is thinking a lot more.
Yeah, I think five. I don't think Apple's. Yeah, whatever. Okay, we'll see. Five to me is. I'm at five for the gold Apple Watch edition. That's where I am.
Okay.
And John noticed the tidbit somewhere where there's an aspect of the Apple Watch that, you know, and because Apple has just, you know, like whipped us into a frenzy by not telling us or showing us much, you know, we pour over every tea leaf we can looking for hints, right?
Yeah, that's what we do.
That's what the world does at this point.
Yeah.
It used to be just us. Us and a couple of other sites.
So we're trendsetters.
Well, yeah, actually, we are. And the what was read from these tea leaves is that the innards of the Apple Watch might actually just essentially flip out, or, you know, be able to be flip out is a bad use of that particular.
Yeah, because phrase. What but I'm visualizing mostly, is. The guts of the watch going, oh, man, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, and I'm mostly pedantic. But it looks like you could there's a lever and you could basically pop out the innards, which means that Apple could conceivably upgrade those innards so that the Apple Watch you buy tomorrow could be, sometime later this year, in 3 years or 2 years or 1 year or whatever, could be upgraded to whatever Apple's doing with its newest Apple Watch.
So you keep the surface piece, the whatever the glass is, sapphire or bionic glass, whatever they're calling it, Ion X glass.
Yeah, John puts a lot of emphasis on the fact that you've got a piece of sapphire that works. I put no emphasis on that whatsoever. Sapphire is a great material, but we're still talking about something that's going to cost like $3, $3 to $5 at most per device.
Right.
So, I mean, that doesn't matter. You're looking at the entire watch body, which includes the sapphire.
Yeah, and then the guts would come out, and new guts would go in, and you'd have the same exterior, but essentially a brand new watch.
Yeah. And here's what that solves. What that solves is the problem of people who are going to spend, say, $5,000, if I'm right, or more if Dave's right, on a gold iWatch that then is relatively, if obsolete's not quite the right world, but outdated in 2, 3, 4 years at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this before. There are plenty of watches that sell for $5,000. There's actually plenty of watches that sell for $10,000, $20,000, and $100,000, $200,000. There's some watches even sell for, you know, $800,000, whatever. The difference there is that those are mechanical devices that are heirloom quality products that can be handed down from generation to generation. They don't lose their value. They actually tend to increase in value as time goes on.
Right. And the notion that someone's going to have an Apple Watch that's an heirloom is not realistic.
It's not realistic because you're not going to want to wear 20, I mean, I don't know, some, you know, whatever the hipster version in 2037 maybe they want to wear, you know, like, oh, look at this, LOL, I've got my Apple Watch.
I have grandpa's Apple Watch.
Yeah, I've got my grandpa's Apple Watch. It's just not, I mean, because technology will have gone on to new things by then. Right? And so a $5,000 investment in a device that has, to me, a realistic lifespan of 2, 3, or 4 years is something only available to those who are truly interested in conspicuously displaying their wealth.
And of course, there is a market for that.
There is a market for that. And there are plenty of people who will legitimately want a gold watch. That's, I don't have a problem with that. My problem is how Apple handles that in the future. I mean, it's like, so, you know, with what we know now, it seems like we got to back up. Look at the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
iPhone, there's a thriving market for used iPhones.
Right. And what you're saying now kind of kills something that I said this morning on Daily Observations, which is that maybe Apple would let people trade in their Apple Watch, just like they currently do with an iPhone, and then give them credit that they can apply to the new model.
Right, which is a possibility, but I don't think it's going to happen. And you pointed out that Apple does that with the iPhone. And my knee-jerk response to that was, Apple offers a trade-in on the iPhone only because Gazelle has made a crap ton of money doing that. Amazon makes money doing that. There are a score of companies that will buy your used iPhone or iPad, or in some cases Android devices, and give you money for them, and they turn around and resell them or refurbish them or, you know, use them for parts and sell them on the secondary market. You know, sell them like sell a lot of these devices end up getting sold in emerging markets. And Apple was extraordinarily late to that game. Extraordinarily late. Years late to that game. And Apple only did it because all these other companies were established. And when they did do it, they're using an intermediate, a third party intermediary. Right? Apple just takes a cut from what this third party company is doing. That's one reason why you actually tend to not get top dollar from Apple when you trade in your iPhone.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, Apple's taking a cut from what this other company is doing.
But it does underscore a point that I hadn't thought about this morning when I said, hey, maybe Apple offer upgrade rebates, which is there's an aftermarket for used iPhones.
Right.
We likely won't have that for Apple Watch.
Yeah, Apple doesn't give us credit for our used iPhone out of the goodness of its corporate heart. Apple gives us money for used iPhones because someone else can make a profit by reselling that iPhone.
Right.
And I am, as of this moment, keep in mind, I want to emphasize this. There's so much we don't know. So much could change when the Apple Watch actually gets released. Right? You know, Apple could make everything that I'm saying or anyone else's. Actually, Apple will be making stuff that someone has said look ridiculous when they actually release the product. So we don't actually know. But Apple, oh my God, I lost my train of thought. Wow. Professionals, folks.
More sausage right here, right in front of you.
Yeah, when we refer to top people, we're not talking about me.
Well, I just assumed it was like a position thing. Like you got on the step stool and
yeah. Apple is not going to be able to make money reselling the Apple Watch, because I don't think there's going to be a secondary market for Apple Watch. It's like, what happens right now? You get your iPhone 2 years later for most of us. You hand down your iPhone to someone else, or you sell it to someone else on Craigslist, or you sell it on eBay, or you send it into Gazelle or Apple or Amazon or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? Because again, there's this thriving secondary market for these things. I don't think that's going to be happening with the Apple Watch, because in 2 years, everyone's going to be people who are interested in this device are going to be interested in what Apple is doing now. Because, you know, the form factor is going to change. Like, I personally expect the second Apple Watch to be 30%, at least 20%, but probably 30% thinner than the previous one.
Now, I don't know if it'll be thinner, but that's because I think Apple will have a way to put a better battery in, and it's going to take up that space. So we'll get longer battery life, but not a thinner body.
I suspect, well, okay, here's the deal. I think that for its diameter, the Apple Watch is thick, and I think that Apple's going to want to make it thinner. That's the thing.
Oh, I'm sure they do want to make it thinner.
You know, and this, my watch is very, very thick. I don't have a problem with thick watches, but a thick watch needs a large diameter. And the Apple Watch is not really all that large, not even the 42 millimeter. It's biggish, but it's not huge. I think that what we'll get with the second Apple Watch is going to be a thinner body and more battery life.
That would be awesome.
That's actually what Apple has done with most iterations of the iPhone. It's been thinner and it's had better battery life, because, you know, Apple is in part because Apple is able to achieve new optimizations in the hardware, but there are also, of course, new you know, smaller processors and all the sorts of things that go into energy efficiency.
Right.
And I don't think there's going to be a big market for these previous generations of Apple Watch. I don't. And so for that reason, I don't think Apple's going to offer any kind of a trade-in, because unless there is a secondary market, a trade-in is going to come right off the margins.
And margins will probably be low enough that Apple doesn't want to play with them too much.
No, not at all. Now, Apple could offer a trade-in on the Gold Watch, because that device will always be worth its weight in gold.
Literally.
The Gold Apple Watch will be worth its case weight.
There we go. Yes, its case weight in gold.
Yeah, not the, you know, wait for the strap or anything like that. I mean, that gold value is always going to be there, and so that device will have a floor, but the stainless steel one won't, and the sport one won't.
Oh, no. Yeah, and Apple, if you buy a sport Apple Watch when it comes out, so we'll say $350, which is about what they're saying right now, mm-hmm. and then 2 years later you go to sell it, you're not going to get $100 for it, is my guess.
No, I don't think so. But you won't see the same resale value on Apple Watch that you see on every other Apple product, except for maybe like airport base stations. But Macs, iPhones, iPads, even iPods have always had these huge resale values because they do retain their usefulness for so long. And I don't think that that's going to be, I just don't think it's going to be the case for the Apple Watch. And I am I'm a fan of the Apple Watch. I can't wait for the Apple Watch. This is, I'm not being a curmudgeon on the product. I'm being a curmudgeon on the longevity and usefulness of the product.
Yeah, and keep in mind, no one owns an Apple Watch yet. I mean, like, no one in the general public.
Yeah, Tim's got one.
Yeah, of course Tim has one. So
my boy Johnny Ives got one.
He's probably got a couple.
He's probably good, yeah. Yeah, Mark what's-his-face has got one. His buddy, you know, his designer. But anyway, whatever, go ahead. Right.
So we don't know what it's really going to be like when Apple Watch ships. I mean, it could turn out that we're all wrong, and Apple Watch has a fantastic resale value.
Well, you know, this is John made a really good point in his piece. All these questions that we're mulling over now and that we started mulling over when Apple showed us are questions that Apple's been mulling over for a year and a half, 2 years, 3 years.
Oh, of course.
So that Apple is planning on releasing a gold Apple Watch edition means that Apple has thought about how to sell this device, who will buy it, and what's going to happen with the upgrade cycle.
Right. Yeah, the conversation we're having right now is old history.
Yes.
In Apple's offices. And
the likelihood, Apple's track record says that Apple has thought about these things. And that Apple has solutions for these problems that we're trying to invent.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not going into this without a plan.
Right. They're not going into this without a plan. And I can't wait to see what that plan is. And it's the fact that I can't see that plan that makes this topic so interesting to me. It makes speculating on this stuff so interesting to me, is because I don't see some of this stuff yet. I don't see how Apple can sell a $5,000 watch that is electronic. I was going to say, I almost said digital, but it's, you know, it's much more than that. It's a computer. I don't see how Apple can sell a $5,000 Apple Watch. And yeah, I know Apple's planning on doing so. So
right.
Can't wait to see how that works.
A wrist top computer that costs more than my MacBook Pro.
Yeah, which is fine. Well, yeah, but your MacBook Pro is not made out of gold.
That's true.
You're paying for the gold.
Right. Yeah.
But $5,000 on a piece of jewelry that will have no wearability value in 2 to 5 years, tops. I struggle with that. I don't get it.
I hadn't picked up on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, this spring is what it sounds like. We'll finally get to see Apple Watch in person, try it out. And at that point, I think we'll have a better idea just what Apple can and can't get away with as far as product cycles go.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still super stoked about this product category. I'm so looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it as well, and I'm the guy that doesn't want to wear stuff on his wrist.
Yeah, well, you sort of joked around about betting on what device will claim your wrist.
Right. And I'm
CES.
Yes, and I'm really curious to see who it is that ultimately wins my wrist, because it seems pretty clear that everyone wants that part of my body.
Yeah. Who will win Jeff's wrist? And they do want that part of your body. The hunger for it.
They do.
That's actually, from a corporate standpoint, that's entirely true right now. There is a massive battle for the wrist brewing that was all sparked by first rumors of the Apple Watch and now, of course, the introduction of the Apple Watch in September. And Jeff is our stand-in for that, because Jeff is he doesn't wear anything on his wrist. He doesn't wear a watch. You have worn a watch professionally.
Yes. Yes, I have.
Another life. But you don't wear one now, and you actually don't want to wear one now.
Right. I have no burning desire to strap something on my wrist.
Although right now you have something strapped onto your wrist.
I do. This morning I put the Wellograph on my wrist.
It's a device we saw at CES that has an e-ink screen
Yes, and heart sensors built into it, and so it tracks your heart rate and how many steps you've taken, and you know the usual stuff that you'd expect.
How do you feel about the brightness? That was the big thing. So this thing has a 5 to 7 day battery life because it's using e-ink as the display.
Turns out brightness is not an issue.
Interesting.
What we could not see when we were at CES, and I believe it's because of the type of lighting that they use in the expo hall.
Yeah, it's a terrible environment for looking or listening, looking at anything or listening to anything.
Yeah. It's horrible. So, but what I found now that I have this in the real world, meaning my office.
On your arm, on your wrist.
On my wrist. It's fine.
Your wrist that clamors to be naked.
Yes. Yeah, naked feels good.
Yeah, I feel naked without my watch when I leave the house. And you just feel uncomfortable with something strapped to your wrist.
Yeah, so what it comes down to is I like to be naked.
Pants. So.
Yeah, but it does have a backlight.
Okay.
Or an illumination thing.
How convenient do you find the information on that thing? Have you worn it long enough to even know?
I've been wearing it for just a few hours.
Okay. All right.
So
we'll talk about that next week then.
Yeah. It's not fair for me to comment on that yet because I really can't give you a good answer.
Fair enough. Now, someone else without a good answer is Quentin James.
Oh, do tell.
Quentin James. I'm kidding about not having a good answer. He posted the best Instagram picture ever. He's sitting behind a car with I should actually look at what the full license plate is.
And you owe Quentin an apology.
So he's behind a car. Quentin lives in the old Britain there, and he's got the license plate that says PE. I guess I said I or one. Who knows? I don't know what the conventions are.
I think it depends on the accent you use.
Yeah. PEIFOOL TMO. That's the worst British accent I've ever done. Anyway, so, and he just said that he was listening to his favorite podcast as he was behind this car with a TMO license plate. I just thought that was the bee's knees.
That was awesome.
Anyway, hat tip to you, sir. I love that thing. Just tickles me to death. Someone else without a clue.
You just want people to not like you.
I do. I'm just phoning it in. IDC released numbers for the fourth quarter and for all of 2014 for PC sales.
And how'd Apple do?
Apple did well. Apple showed 18.9% year-over-year growth, according to IDC. And quite frankly, Aaron Dilger's expose on the way these numbers are compiled for the smartphone and iPad industry over at Apple Insider last year really just makes me suspect all of these numbers. But according to IDC, Apple gained 1.3 percentage points in market share year over year in the fourth quarter. And that's globally. Apple is the number five PC sales company, PC manufacturer in the world with 7.1% share.
That's pretty impressive, especially when you think about where Apple was 10 years ago.
Yeah, with like 1.8% share of you know, like 5% share in the U.S. And, you know, Apple was never in the top five. And keep in mind, the extra fascinating thing for me is that Apple competes only at the high end. Apple's cheapest computer, the Mac Mini, starts at what, $599?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And the average selling price today of PCs is $400. So Apple's cheapest Mac is
50%, above the average.
Yeah, 50% above the average. 50%. And Apple doesn't even sell many Mac Minis.
No, they don't. And the overall market, the trend has been declining for PC sales. I know right now that trend has come up a little bit, but the multi-year trend has been declining PC sales.
Well, so globally, shares declined 2.4% according to IDC. And but the my problem, I'm not going to hang my hat too much on those numbers because all of the losses came from the others category. So according to IDC, all of the top five global PC sales manufacturers saw an increase year over year in the fourth quarter. Lenovo up 4.9%, HP up 15.1%. HP, by the way, was the only company even close to Apple. Dell was up 8.5%, and the Acer Group was up 3.2%. But others were down 20.7%. And if we go back to Darren Aaron Dillinger's deconstruction and expose of this particular industry, they've always used others to justify their preconceptions in the smartphone and tablet industries. And I do find these numbers suspect. Right, untrustworthy. It's not suspect.
Okay. That's a better word. Untrustworthy.
I don't want to put too much. I mean, and you know, Apple reports actual sales to customers, and these other companies don't.
No, they're reporting what they're dropping into channels.
Yes. But to be fair, at least in the PC industry, all these companies do report actual unit sales. They report unit numbers. In the smartphone and tablet industry, that's not necessarily the case. Apple's like the only company that does that.
And if you're not willing to report your numbers, I now am suspect as to why you don't want me to hear your numbers.
In the U.S., Apple is the number three computer manufacturer with 12.2% of the market. That's stunning.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Stunning, and that's up from 11.4% in 2013. These are, by the way, yearly numbers. So 12.2% for the Mac in 2014 compared to 11.4% in 2013. But of the top four, all top four companies saw year-over-year annual growth. Apple was actually had the least strong sales, but Apple gained share because others lost 18.2%.
All right, so Apple still came out ahead.
Yeah, at the expense of the ill-defined and unsourced others. And Toshiba...
Oh, others.
What's that?
Oh, I'm shaking my fist at the others cause.
Absolutely. Toshiba was the number five manufacturer, according to IDC, and they saw a 7.5% decline. Everyone else had double-digit growth, Apple being the least good, 11.4% year-over-year.
That's still anyway, impressive.
12% market share for the Mac. I mean, that's, you know, I got my start doing this in 1998 when, or at least that's when we relaunched as the Mac Observer. And, you know, Apple was doomed and beleaguered and Apple, you know, had no market share and the Mac was going to go away and Apple's going to die. And, you know, Apple's going to have to license the Mac OS if it wants to survive. And we haven't seen that one in a few years, but it's so weird to be at a point where today Apple is just doing incredibly well. And again, Apple is the only company selling at the top. Everyone else is lowballing it.
That's true. Yeah, I remember when Apple's big thing wasn't, hey, look at the computers we're selling. It was, look how quickly we can move product through our channel. We're doing just-in-time delivery.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't really talk about how great their sales were.
Yeah.
So they had to find something else.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know there were some quarters where Apple's sales were down year over year. I think it's been like close to 30 quarters now where Apple has outgrown the market as a whole.
That's pretty impressive.
It is. I think maybe like one, there might be one quarter where Apple didn't in that, but I mean it's a pretty impressive track record, and you know it just goes to show that you know Apple still makes a lot of money on the Macintosh. In addition to the fact that Apple relies on the Macintosh to do its own design work and engineering work and all those things, the product itself has got legs, and the product itself is still needed. We might be in a post-PC era, hint, we're not. But the PCs and Macs still have a lot of relevance, and it's nice to see the Mac doing so well.
It is, and I agree, we're not in a post-PC era yet. I think where we are is in the beginning of the tablet era. Well, and so we'll have this overlap for a while.
I'm still tense because Steve Ballmer used a term that I coined. Now, he, of course, may have coined it first, but I was definitely talking about it in our TMO meetings long before Steve Ballmer ever said it. And I think it's more accurate to call it a PC Plus era, not a post-PC era. But I'm pretty,
all right,
I'm pretty
I'll accept
tense that.
That
Steve Ballmer said it before I could actually put it in printing and print.
Well, now we just need to figure out who our mole is that was feeding info back to Ballmer.
Yeah. So anyway, Mac's doing well. Apple share is doing well, at least according to these numbers, you know, for what they're worth.
Yeah, for what they're worth is validation that Apple is continuing to see good sales, and where we really get that information is from Apple at their quarterly earnings reports.
Right.
So yeah, they're just backing up what we already know about Apple.
Yep. Making it a good time, you know. It's a new year. It's going to be a big year for Apple. The Apple Watch is Tim Cook's real test about delivering something without Steve Jobs. You know, everything else that Apple has released since Steve Jobs passed away or iterations on products that Steve was involved with. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Apple Watch. It's going to be interesting to see where the Mac continues to go. It's going to be interesting to see. But, you know, one of the things I enjoyed the most at CES was HP's curved display.
Oh, yes.
Right? Thing was so gorgeous. And to me, for a long time, Apple was selling the best display. The Cinema display was like the best display.
You know, I jumped ship from Apple as the best display maker a few years ago when HP released the Dream Color.
The Dream Color is a good product line. But the Cinema display today, the Thunderbolt display actually is what it's called, to me is it's overpriced and it underperforms. And so I'm hoping that Apple, that's one of the things Apple fixes this year. I'm hoping the software continues to improve this year. I want to see some of these bugs worked out.
That would be really nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apple, give me a really great computer with amazing stable software. And HP, give me a beautiful display to view it on.
Yeah, at this point, I want that curved display. That's the display I want on my desk. I've got a Cinema display, pre-Thunderbolt. But at this point, to me, that curved display is actually the curved display is even more desirable than HP's 5K display because the form factor on that 5K display is not attractive.
It is a beautiful image, but that curved display, there's just something magical about
it. Yeah,
I think HP has totally nailed the curved display.
Yeah, I want that. Do you remember what the price point on that was? Is it $1,800, $1,500, something like that?
No, it's not. It's around $1,000.
No.
Yeah, it's like $1,200 for the 34-inch, and it's like $800 or $900 for the 27-inch. Surprisingly priced. Or am I mixing it up with their 4K displays?
The 5K display was only $1,299.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
That to me was pretty just a very, very aggressive price. The curved display, $999? Are you kidding me?
I was pretty sure it was a good price.
But how are they? They were talking to me about how difficult it is to curve the display part of a display without breaking it. So how are they doing that for $1,000? For $1,000, you can get 3440 by 1440. It's a 21:9 aspect ratio. Right? For $1,000, you can get that from HP, or you can get the what's my resolution here? It's 2580, is that right? Professionals, folks.
Yeah, it's been so long since Apple updated their display. I don't even remember the numbers anymore. Does it actually use electricity to drive that display, or do you light candles for the backlighting?
This is good because they don't actually tell you. In, I haven't realized this because I haven't changed it in Yosemite. In the display preference panel, you don't actually see the resolution. I think it's like 2580 by 12 or 1490 or 1440 or something like that.
The point is, it's a much lower resolution.
Much than lower. For the same price.
Yeah.
For the same price. $999. That is stellar. Oh, I'm drooling. I'm plotting also.
See, HP, they're serious about the display market.
Yeah, well, and Dell's 5K display was like, wasn't it $2,500?
Yeah, and their display quality just overall doesn't come close to what HP is.
Right, and I will give Apple credit here. And the 5K display on the iMac, I think, might be best in class. It's the gorgeousest.
Yes. Yeah, if I were in the market to buy an iMac, it would be a 5K.
Absolutely. It's the first iMac that I've truly wanted since the original iMac. And that was just to have it. That's beside the point. The 5K display iMac, I think, may be best in class. And its price is also incredibly compelling at $2,499 is where it starts. And the form factor on it is just infinitely better than HP's. HP's 5K display is not a pretty case.
No, but if you need that that display, it's a very competitive price. For video
folks. Yeah, you can edit 4K and still have room left over for palettes. All right, we have we have strayed far afield and gone over.
We haven't strayed far afield. We strayed through the field.
But we still went over.
Okay. We definitely have. So I should say the words that make the show end. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, you can follow Jeff over on Twitter.
I forgot to mention Twitter.
Yeah, at Jay Gamet. And I'm on Twitter at TMOBrian. It's Brian with a Y. Content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And lynda.com/ACM is the place to go for our sponsor to get your 10-day free trial.
Yes, go learn something.
Go learn something new this year, man.
Yeah, you'll be better for it. And stay subscribed.
Yeah, that's all for this week. Oh, wait, we'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Top men.
Top men. Hey, what episode is this?
289.
Ah, okay.